top five on the Rokan Show. Let's go.
This is the top five at five on the Rokan Show.
Thank you, Mr. Duffy. Checking in at
number five.
Responding to critics, the president apparently taking on presidential candidates who've been criticizing his strategy against ISIS while answering questions today at the G20 summit in Turkey.
What we do not do, what I do not do, is to take actions either because it is going to work politically or it is going to somehow, in the abstract, make America look tough. Or make me look tough.
He then went on to challenge them, hey, you got a plan?
We'll do what's required to keep the American people safe. And I think it's entirely appropriate in a democracy to have a serious debate about these issues. Folks want to pop off and have opinions about what they think they would do, present a specific plan. If they think that somehow their advisors are better than the chairman of my Joint Chiefs of Staff, and the folks who are actually on the ground, I want to meet them.
How much do you think that's about Trump?
Well, I think it's a direct shot at him, but I think it's also anticipating that, you know, all the Republicans are going to chime in now. Say, see, we told you so. You know, if you would have bombed, you know, Raqqa earlier, you know, bombs never would have been built in Brazil. You know, or in Brussels.
Same thing.
Yeah. And, you know, and again, that's unfortunate. This is, you know, too big of a tragedy to play politics with, you know, and I think the president's trying to set the line, you know, because he did it in a very forceful but kind of almost a,
well, the problem here,
in a personal way.
Here's what the problem is, though. And I think that this is where I think legitimate debate can be held here without being told, well, my Joint Chiefs are smarter than your Joint Chiefs. There's the Joint Chiefs, but then there's also, you know, the guys who are command and control guys at the Pentagon and at the Special Operations Headquarters in Tampa and all the rest of the places that watch this stuff. Your guy, your director in Langley, Virginia, of the CIA, your FBI director, all of them can weigh in on what these threats are because CIA is looking at these international threats. The FBI is looking at domestic and international threats. They investigate this stuff as well. And you've got all your military guys. You know that, and, you know, we talked earlier with Congressman Kinzinger, who said that there's sort of a lack of communication going on between not the joint chairman, the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, but between the Pentagon, the chiefs essentially, and the White House, and that there are politics being considered here. And the problem that the president is going to have, it's very simple. France, not considered to be one of the more aggressive military, put it this way, aggressive militaristic nations on Earth, is like, you know, unleashing a can of whoop ass here. And they're using our own intelligence to do it. They've asked us for these targets. We've given it to them, and they're bombing them.
Well, but, you know, that's actually, I think, smart on their part and our part. First of all, France almost has a historic as well as present motivation to take a hard line right now. Mm-hmm. And let's be honest, too. President Hollande, he's in a difficult position now politically as well.
He has an election coming up in a couple of weeks.
And I'm not saying he's doing this at all for political reasons, but there's a backdrop to that as well. But France, you know, they have not been at the literal or proverbial front lines in Syria. So it only makes...
Although they've always been the front line, which is very funny. Yeah.
They had a need for it to be their planes that are going in and doing the damage. We've got the best intelligence. So from that standpoint, it's a win-win. The problem that I think the president is seeing now is that it becomes very easy, unfortunately, to Monday morning quarterback whatever the U.S. had done or not done and then say, see, we told you so.
Well, yes. All right. So going back to I think your point about the president of France, Hollande's issue here, is that he does have a very significant opposition that is forming. They have their elections coming up, I believe, the first week of December. The Conservative Party has done very, very well there and is continuing to do so and is growing, and this is only going to push for it. And the Conservative Party there is, you know, it's like our conservatives here, in America, it runs the gamut, right? You've got conservatives who are just fiscal conservatives who, you know, are interested in just making sure that France, that the economy of France doesn't get impacted by the you know, how they operate. And, you know, they've had trouble with that over many, many, many years. But now there is a bit of, you know, because they're at the all these nations in Europe are dealing with the refugee crisis firsthand from Syria. So there's an anti-immigrant policy. The obviously France has been targeted by Islamist terrorists for years now because of the because they in the public schools there, they refuse to let the kids wear religious garb. Right. So if you want to be in the public schools in France, you want to go to a madrasa in France, you can go to a madrasa in France. But you get cannot in the public schools wear a headdress, essentially, if you're a Muslim. And that is that has driven many people in the the crazy part of the world nuts.
But we have to be very careful with that, because you don't want to attribute anything that's going to blur the line between practicing Muslims and what we're dealing with Daesh.
Well, this is France's issue, not our issue.
Well, no, understood. But even when you're just, you know, it's tough to say that there's a nexus between France's restrictions on the exercise of Muslim religion when those same Muslims are going to say, these radicals do not represent us. They're not true Muslims even.
Right. But that's not the, but the issue politically in France goes to this, the hardliners, the French conservative hardliners, are starting to get a lot more traction.
Correct. But where they're finding difficulty here is, I think that Hollande is taking the proper and probably only steps that can be taken. And it's not,
he's got to toughen himself up here.
And it's not, as if the conservatives anywhere on that spectrum could do anything or would do anything that he's not doing right now. They immediately launched military attacks. He's looking to put in a state of emergency with the French legislature to expand their abilities to respond and react. So there's not a whole lot more that the folks on the right or his opposition in the upcoming election could do. But again, I don't want to say that's what he's motivated by. I think he's doing exactly very similar to the things that we probably would do or any other European leader.
All right. Checking in at
number four.
Thank you. Saturday night, Stockholm, Sweden. Madonna on stage stopped her concert to address the situation in Paris, but she had to explain why she didn't cancel her show.
I was going to cancel my show tonight, but then I thought to myself, why should I give that to them? Why should I allow them to stop me and to stop us from enjoying freedom?
Madonna making it about herself. I find that very hard to believe that she would do something like that.
Well, you know, somewhere in ISIS, they're saying, you know, she hasn't had a good song since, you know, Get Into the Groove. We've got to stop her somehow.
Then she's not the only celebrity to make it about themselves. Here's Will Smith.
Jada and I were up all night, you know, and it's such a difficult, painful, awful, horrible situation, and our, you know, our hearts and our prayers go out to the families, and it's one of those things where you feel helpless. What do you do? What's the solution? How do you help?
You punch that alien right in the head. That's what you do. And then finally, this, I've not heard this yet, but I if you put it in, it must be good. Here's a guy who's always level-headed about situations like this. Here's Christian Bale.
These are truly horrific individuals. Everybody is in solidarity and in extreme pain with the people of France. And we need wisdom, and we need to look to our elders to truly, in a soulful way, figure out how do we respond to and what is to be done from here on in.
Well, he was thoughtful. I don't know that he said anything, though, in that. There was a five sentences that really added up to zero right there, Batman.
Oh, good for you.
That was, I don't know, people may not be familiar with that piece of audio. That was Christian Bale when a guy walked into his light on the set of one of the Batman movies. I'm sorry, Terminator. It was a Terminator movie. Yeah. Yep.
One of the biggest issues we may have there is that anybody cares what Will Smith or Madonna or Christian Bale think about what's
right.
going on here.
Right. We care about what the guys were going to do something about it. We're going to think, oh, but wait a second. Coming up, Charlie Sheen, if you've not heard this story yet today, This is a blockbuster. This is something everyone's going to be talking about tomorrow, and we have the story. But first, all right, do we continue on with your top five at five? Checking in at
number three.
Oh, man. John Fritchie in for Anna DeVlantis today. Boy, this is going to be. People will be talking about this tomorrow. Charlie Sheen, who needs no further introduction, will announce tomorrow on Good Morning America, on the Today Show, on the Good Morning Today Show. Sorry, on the Today Show. This is an exclusive. That he is HIV positive. This really should be a shock to no one, shouldn't it?
Losing.
I'd say so. This is going to be an interview with Matt Lauer. TMZ says that Sheen knew about his status for more than a year and tried to keep the medical news a secret. But friends he had trusted with the diagnosis started leaking the information.
Some are saying that you're bipolar.
Wow, what does that mean?
I guess that, you know, you're on two ends of the spectrum.
Wow, and then what? What's the cure? Medicine? Make me like them? Not gonna happen. I'm bi-winning. I win here and I win there. Now what? If I'm bipolar, aren't there moments where a guy like crashes into like in the corner like, oh my God, it's all my mom's fault? Shut up. Stop, move forward.
He's well adjusted. That was 2011. When he was out on the winning tour. I went to go see, I was foolish enough to go to that winning tour at the Chicago Theater, not because I was supportive of this goof, this walking train wreck mess, but I couldn't believe, I just had to see what this was all about.
It's like Celebrity NASCAR, you're just waiting for the crash. It's coming somewhere.
Yeah, oh man, this guy is just a mess. But beyond being this mess, I mean, think about this. Now, we were talking about this a little bit off the air. I mean, if he was knowingly having unprotected sex and not informing his partners of his HIV status, that's a felony in a lot of states.
It's a felony in a lot of states. And, you know, this is going to be, I think, the second generation of this story as it starts to develop. Inevitably, some woman is going to come forward to say, you know, whether or not I was infected really isn't the issue. The issue is that it's either some type of battery claim or a knowing reckless conduct. And, you know, he may find not only civil cases against him, but he could wind up with a criminal charge.
By the way, right now, hold on, Connor McKnight has important breaking sports news. This is pretty good. This is pretty cool.
Yeah, Cubs third baseman Chris Bryant just named the NL Rookie of the Year. He is the 20th unanimous Rookie of the Year in Major League history. He led all rookies with 26 home run. And remember, Ro, he was just one shy that whole weekend in Milwaukee, one RBI shy of 100. He had 99 in the year. Sixth Cub to win it in the first since. Can you name the last one? The last Cub to win it?
Last Cub rookie to win Rookie of the Year.
He wore a lot of equipment when he played. You have to at that position.
Giovanni Soto.
Giovanni Soto is your last Cub rookie of the year, 2008.
Okay, there you go.
And how about the fact that, you know what his salary was this year? $500,000.
That's Chris Bryant.
Chris Bryant. Yeah. $507,000. Could be the best money ever spent by the Cubs.
Well, and they screwed him, too, because they held him back for a week and a half
right,
so that they could keep him on the rookie contract for it. But he's going to get – there must be bonuses built in for something like
that. Well, there will be arbitration. Yeah, after 3 years in the league, you're eligible for arbitration, and his price will skyrocket.
Yes. Yes, it will.
And deservedly so.
Yeah. I once had Kerry Wood stick his finger in my ear in a bar, wet-willied me, because he thought I was Giovanni Soto.
Was this at the bowling event? I think I was there with you.
No, this was at a different event. And he literally stuck his and I look around. I go, "What are you doing?" Like, I didn't realize, you know, who it could be. And it was Kerry Wood. I go, "What?" And, "Oh, Kerry Wood. Why would you?" And he goes, "Oh, man, I'm so sorry. I thought you were Giovanni Soto." And I don't know if I guess that was a compliment, I'm assuming.
I'm just wondering then, you know, how does that make it okay then? Like, assuming I was.
when Soto showed up at that event, I wanted to say, "He's going to wet willy you."
She'd be like, "This is from Kerry."
Kerry would have
number
done a
lot. Two.
Sorry, what?
Kerry would have done a lot worse to Sammy Sosa.
Yeah. All right, here we go. Today on Good Morning America, Elizabeth Banks spoke about her role in the Hunger Games film series, which is coming to a close with the premiere of Mockingjay Part 2 on Friday. Banks explained why her character Effie returned in the final two installments of the film series, despite being missing from the books.
After Catching Fire, I think everybody just agreed that Effie was sort of a fan favorite and that she had a real connection to Katniss that I think you couldn't really see in the books. I loved her. She was You know, she's really iconic, and there's a lot of creativity within Effie, and I'll miss that for sure.
Richard Roper will be reviewing that on Friday on this very radio program. I love me some Elizabeth Banks. But then again, who doesn't? All right, and finally,
number one.
Home Alone, celebrating its 25th anniversary today.
Dreaming of a white Christmas.
It made stars out of Macaulay Culkin. It made a star out of him, actually, not just stars. Whose character, Kevin McAllister, is left home alone and thwarts a robbery attempt by a pair of burglars. Who can forget the plot?
I took a shower washing every body part with actual soap, including all my major crevices, including in between my toes and in my belly button, which I never did before but sort of enjoyed. I washed my hair with the Don't Formula shampoo and used cream rinse for that just wash shine. I can't seem to find my toothbrush, so I'll pick one up when I go out today. Other than that, I'm in good shape.
Yep, there he goes. If you grow up to be a creepy kid, though.
I was just about to say, yo, those couple days alone really took their impact on him.
Yeah, I mean, it didn't worry. He must have been remembering what happened as he got a little older. He's calling Michael Jackson, going, goodness, by the night. It was weird. Very weird.
You won't be home alone with me.
All right, here we go. Let's wrap this thing up.
The top five at five.